Om Sahana Vavatu, Sahanao Bhunaktu, Sahaviryan Karavavahai, Tejasvinavadhitamastu Mavidvishavahai. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti, Narayanam Namaskritya Narayanam, Naram Chaiva Narottamam Naram Chaiva. Devim Sarasvatim Chaiva Devim Tato Jayamudirayet Pithamahadyam Pravadanti Shashtam Pithamahadyam Maharshimakshaya Vibhuti Yuktam Maharshimakshaya Narayana Syam Shajameka Putram Narayana Syam Dvaipayanam Vedanadhim Namami Dvaipayanam Vedanadhim. Very good. Welcome back. We're continuing in our study of a chapter from the Mahabharata in which Indra goes to Prahlada for advice. And a very unusual story. And in order to understand the story, we should... Most of you are familiar with the early part of Prahlada's story. The latter part is that he became king after his father was killed. But then he was later usurped. His kingdom was usurped by his cousin. Prahlada was king. He was overthrown by his cousin, Andaka, and put in prison. And what was odd was, in spite of being in prison, Prahlada was absolutely okay. Indra saw this and then wanted to know, why does Prahlada, how can he be okay? How can he be content and comfortable in his horrible situation? More surprisingly, and perhaps more significantly, Prahlada had no blame or resentment for having his cousin kick him out of his own kingdom. That's something remarkable. We have all suffered at the hands of others. And generally, when we're hurt by someone else, it stings. Depending on how badly we're hurt, it can sting a little, it can sting a lot. And that sting is usually accompanied by blame. He did it, she did it. And resentment. I didn't deserve it. Why did they do that to me? These feelings can be incredibly intense and deny us peace, inner peace, and the ability to live our lives and enjoy our lives. Prahlada, surprisingly, was utterly without these reactions, in spite of suffering a tremendous injustice. Why? And just to summarize our last class, why is he understood, given his cousin's nature, his cousin's name was Andaka, given his cousin's nature, according to Prahlada, it was inevitable. His cousin was greedy. His cousin was adharmic. His cousin was just a nasty person. And it was, in a sense, inevitable that sooner or later his cousin would kick him out of his own palace. Along with that, Prahlada expressed his perspective that, in a sense, Andaka didn't choose to throw him out of his palace. Andaka was under the sway of his own nature. And this is Prahlada's contention, is that human nature is driven by swabhava. Human behavior, I should say, human behavior is driven by swabhava, one's own natural inclinations. And therefore, Prahlada de-emphasizes purushartha. And we said in the last class, purushartha is the closest word we have to free will. Purushartha doesn't mean free will, but it suggests the same thing. Purushartha means effort. But the suggestion, the implication then, especially if you misunderstand Prahlada's words, one might construe that there is no such thing as free will. And we're going to return to that topic once again. And there's some debate about whether or not free will exists or not. We've talked about that several times. We're going to talk about it again here today. In fact, our discussion today will put things in very good perspective. To pick up the thread, maybe it would be best to see the next verse. Prahlada speaks to Indra, and he explains.
Yastu kartaram hatmanam, yastu kartaram hat, manyate sadva sadhunoho, manyate sadva sadhun, tasya doshavati prajna, tasya doshavati. Swamurtya gneti me matihi, swamurtya gneti me matihi.
Yaha tu kartaram atmanam manyate. One who manyate, considers atmanam, considers oneself, to be kartaram, to be the doer, to be the agent of actions. What kind of actions? Sadhu and asadhu. One who considers himself to be the agent of the literal meaning of sadhu is an adjective, means good. Sadhu simply means good. Asadhu, not so good. By the way, it's just fun to observe that if we were attending in ancient India, if we were attending a drama of Kalidasa, when you applaud, you're not going to say hooray, you're not going to say bravo, which is Italian, you're not going to say shabash, it's modern Hindi. You're going to speak in Sanskrit, because Kalidasa's plays are in Sanskrit, and you will reply by saying sadhu, sadhu, good, good. Honestly, the word was used in that way. So, kartaram sadhu asadhu noho. One who considers himself to be the agent of actions, good and bad. Now we get Prahlada's opinion here. Tasya doshavati prajna. So according to Prahlada, that tasya prajna, that person's understanding, that person's wisdom is doshavati, defective. One who considers himself to be the agent of actions, good and bad, according to Prahlada, such a person's thinking is defective. Swamurti agna iti me matihi. He says, such a person is swamurti agna, ignorant of his own nature. Swamurti, murti here, nature. Swamurti agna, ignorant of his own nature. Iti me matihi. Please reflect on these words. Iti, thus, is me, my, matihi, contention. Thus is my contention. Is he saying it's a fact? Careful now. This is where some people really go off when they read the scriptures. You can find several passages in this chapter where Prahlada flat out denies the existence of free will. Fine. Shall we conclude then? Since it occurs in the Mahabharata, it must be true, right? Since those statements occur in the Mahabharata, it must be true. Wait a minute. Prahlada admits, this is me matihi, this is my opinion, this is my contention. It's not being expressed as a fact. We have to be careful, and sadly, some are not careful. To handle a scripture like Mahabharata takes a moderate amount of scholarship. And if there's not a sufficient amount of scholarship, it's pretty easy to make these mistakes and conclude, oh, Mahabharata says there's no free will. Well, in the introduction of this chapter, I said, every teaching has to be understood in the context of who's speaking it. Who's speaking it here? Prahlada. Prahlada happens to be enlightened. Therefore, from his perspective as an enlightened person, there's no free will for two reasons. One is very clear in his verse. He says, one who considers Atmanam Kartaram, one who considers Satchidananda Atma to be the Kartaram, to be the agent, that person is incorrect. Hey, this is pure Vedanta. Vedanta says, the teachings of the rishis say, that Satchidananda Atma is the consciousness that reveals all mental activities. That consciousness in and of itself doesn't do anything at all. Further, decision-making processes and willful actions all take place in the mind, do they not? They do. To make a decision, to willfully act, all of these are mental activities revealed by consciousness. Therefore, Prahlada can correctly say that they don't belong to Atma, they don't belong to Satchidananda Atma. So that's one perspective from which Prahlada rejects free will. But there's another perspective. Because Atmanam doesn't always mean Satchidananda, sometimes it just means myself, oneself. And Prahlada even rejects free will from that level. One, if we interpret this verse, one who considers oneself to be an agent is ignorant. Prahlada, in Prahlada's experience as an enlightened person, Prahlada experiences himself as not having free will. How can he experience himself as not having free will? This is a little subtle. Let me explain, then we can move on through some verses. Why do you use your free will? Because we have stuff to do. We have a to-do list. We have an agenda. We have things we want. We have other things we want to avoid. Because we have raga dvesha, we are prompted into action. We employ our free will to go for what we want and avoid what we don't want. Suppose there was nothing that you wanted. Suppose there was nothing that you wanted to avoid. Suppose you just finished a cup of tea, you're sitting in a comfortable chair, your to-do list is blank for the time being, you're comfortable, you're happy, everything is just nice. At that moment, will you use your free will? What for? There's nothing to do, nothing that needs to be done. You experience that in moments. You have moments of complete contentment. For an enlightened person like Prahlada, it's an abiding sense. An abiding sense that there's nothing that needs to be done. There's a Sanskrit term for it which is very descriptive. Krita krityata is the term that's used to describe this. It's a condition in which anything that is kritya, to be done, that's your to-do list, anything that's kritya is krita, done. Anything that's to be done is done. Now, your to-do list may be blank for a day or two at most. Maybe for a minute or two, at most is more likely. For a person such as Prahlada, the to-do list is empty and remains such. In that condition, where is the necessity for free will? This is a very interesting insight into the mind of an enlightened person. It's utterly unlike conventional thought. Conventional behavior is driven by personal agenda. There are things you need to do. That's where the agency comes in, that's where the free will comes in. But the mind of a Mahatma, such as Prahlada, is utterly unlike that. Just imagine that moment of contentment when you feel nothing needs to be done. Imagine that being an abiding, unchanging sense. Nothing needs to be done. In that situation, there's no need, no necessity to employ free will. Therefore, Prahlada, as such a Mahatma, has set his, I can't even say set his free will aside. It's more like, this is a silly example. In your kitchen cabinets are lots of cooking tools and appliances that you haven't used in years. You have the tools, but they're not used. Maybe in your garage, there are also tools hanging someplace. Tools that are present, but they remain utterly unused. Why are they unused? No need, no necessity. For a Mahatma such as Prahlada, free will is such a tool. It's an appliance that's present, but there's absolutely no need for it. This is Prahlada's perspective when he says, "Me matihi." This is my perspective. Free will is useless. So this is to be understood. So let us proceed. He develops this in the next verse. Next verse goes with the prior one. We'll see it.
Yadi syat purusha karta, yadi syat purusha karta, shakratma shreyase dhruvam, shakratma shreyase arambhasthasya siddhyeran, arambhasthasya siddhyer, nacha jhatu parabhavet, natu jhatu parab.
It says, yadi, suppose, yadi syat, suppose, purusha karta, chakra. Chakra, o Indra, he addresses Indra, Prahlada addresses Indra. He says, suppose, purusha karta, suppose a purusha, a person, really was the agent. And here the context is atma, Satchidananda atma. Suppose Satchidananda atma really were endowed with free will. Bear in mind, Satchidananda Atma is the truth of yourself. It's the inner divinity. It's Bhagavan's presence within you, so to speak. So he says, suppose Atma truly were endowed with free will, yadi syat. Suppose it were so, he says, shreyase dhruvam. That would certainly be good. That would certainly be shreyase, beneficial. Not just beneficial, that would be of extraordinary value, shreyase. That would be of extreme value. Dhruvam, certainly. Why? Arambhaha tasya, any undertaking of that person, tasya, for such a person, anything that's arambha, any undertaking, which would be the good English translation, any work or task that were undertaken, siddhyeran is a potential verb, would certainly be successful. Any undertaking would certainly be successful, definitely be successful. Is that true for you? All of your efforts and undertakings are invariably successful? No. But here, Prahlada is observing, suppose free will, watch the logic here, suppose free will belonged to Satchidananda Atma. Satchidananda Atma is that inner divinity. Satchidananda Atma is non-separate from the almighty, all-powerful Ishvara. So, if Atma were possessed of free will, you would be all-powerful like Ishvara. That's the argument that's being given here. But fact is, your free will, he says, arambhaha tasya siddhyeran, all of that person's undertakings would be successful, nacha jatu parabhavet, and that person, nacha, would not jatu ever, parabhavet, would never be defeated. Such a person would always be successful, such a person would never be defeated. That's not how your free will works. Your free will is not always successful. Your free will is occasionally, if not frequently, defeated by the free wills of others. Why is that so? Your free will abides in your mind. Is your mind all-powerful? That's the point. We have free will, but it's limited. We could say Ishvara is endowed with limitless free will, but human beings are endowed with a very limited free will. But the point Prahlada makes here is that if free will truly belonged to Atma, then it would be limitless. So here's a very important Vedantic understanding. Free will does not belong to Atma. Free will belongs to your mind, to your intellect, and as such is certainly limited. All right, and we'll move on. Next two verses also go together as a pair. This will also give us an opportunity to, I'll introduce a nice metaphor in just a few minutes, which will put free will into context, very important context.
Anishtasya hi nirvrittir, anishtasya hi nirvrittir, anirvritti priyasya cha, anirvritti priyasya cha, lakshyate yatamhananam, lakshyate yatamhan, purushartastatah kutah, purushartastatah kutah.
We have to be a little careful about words. Even the editor here is a little bit careless. Two words which are very similar but opposite in meaning, nivritti and nirvritti, are actually opposite in meaning. Nivritti means cessation. Nirvritti means accomplishment. So we have to really be careful, and there are actually one or two places where the editor made some mistakes. First word here is nirvrittihi, correctly. Second word is anivritti, which is incorrect. It has to be also nirvritti. Anyway, just be on guard. Editors make mistakes. So this was edited, right? So they make mistakes. All right. When you see the meaning, it's very obvious. Anishtasya hi nivrittihi anirvrittihi priyasya cha lakshyate yatamananam. Lakshyate, it is seen, it is observed, yatamananam, among those who strive, among those who appear to use their free will to accomplish things. It is observed, lakshyate, it's observed. What is observed? Anishtasya, that which you don't want, he, indeed, nirvrittihi, happens, it's accomplished. You get what you don't want. Not only that, but anirvrittihi, we have to correct the writing here. Anirvrittihi priyasya cha. Priyasya, for what you want, anirvritti, there's the absence of accomplishment. I'll paraphrase. It is observed among people who make an effort in life that they don't get what they want and they get what they don't want. It's like, is that telling us anything new? Every day, in spite of our efforts, as hard as we try in life, you know, we work so hard and we work so intelligently. We try to figure out what is exactly the best course of action to try to avoid all the problems and get what we want. And as hard as we try and as carefully as we work to reach our goals, what happens? Anishtasya nirvrittihi. You get what you don't want. And anirvrittihi priyasya. You fail to get what you want. This is life. It happens all the time. So, but now watch. Remember who's speaking these words? Prahlada, who has this very peculiar orientation. So based on this statement, Prahlada says, therefore, tataha, therefore, purushartaha, kutaha. He says, then where is there any such thing as purushartha, as free will? What is the meaning of free will? What is the meaning of effort if you don't get what you want and you get what you don't want in spite of your efforts? What's the point? To paraphrase Prahlada. So, you can appreciate that in some way there's some very basic wisdom in his words, but if we take his perspective to the extreme of utterly denying the existence of free will, we've made a horrible blunder, a horrible mistake. And this is a good time to introduce a very powerful traditional metaphor. You may have seen this years ago when we got into a long discussion about karma. So let's go to the board and see this very traditional metaphor, drishtanta, which makes it very clear the role of free will and the role of what happens to us in spite of our efforts. Prahlada's point here is that in spite of your efforts, you can't get what you want and you can't avoid what you don't want. Does that mean that your efforts are utterly useless? That's what we need to explore right now. And the best way to explore it is with this traditional drishtanta, which examines the limits of free will, especially when we find in life there's so many factors that we don't control, we can't anticipate. So the metaphor given is that of a river. Many of you have seen this before. You're on the bank of the river. You want to cross to the other side. And the two factors present in this metaphor, one is the current of the river is one factor. In this case, it's from top to bottom. So there's a current of the river, but there's also your effort in swimming. And let's set up the metaphor. Yatamananam, for those who make yatna, effort. So swimming takes effort. Suppose in this river, you make an effort, you use your free will, and you make an effort to swim towards your goal on the other side. Will you reach your goal? That's what Prahlada observes. Anishtasya nirvruttihi. You get what you don't want. What is it that you don't want? Well, you wanted to reach the goal, you didn't want to end up down here. But that's exactly where you're going to end up. Why? Your free will is not the only factor involved. This is a very silly example. If you create your own universe and you are the only being living in that universe, then your free will be almighty. But this is not your universe, nor are you the only person here who has free will. Look around you. Every other person who lives, they each have their own free will. And the sum total of all these factors we have to deal with. Your free will is not exclusive. It's not unopposed. So in this typical metaphor, in this traditional drishtanta, the flow of the water represents all the other factors. What are the other factors? Well, how about the free will of everyone else? Those are other factors. How about karma? Your own karma, the karma of others. How about laws of nature? Those are all other factors. You have free will, but can you use your free will to flap your arms and fly? So nature is a factor over which you have no control. Can you use your free will? Well, let's come back here. So this shows there are so many factors that we can't anticipate, we can't control, like the free will of others, like nature, like the force of your own karma, like the force of other people's karma. There are so many other factors affecting us, so that if we use our free will, this really shows very clearly. Here we are, we look at our goal, we analyze what kind of effort is required to reach the goal, and we jump in the water and we swim really, really hard because we're all very ambitious, energetic people. And what happens? Yatamananam, for those who strive, priyasya anirvrittihi, they fail to get what they want. So Prahlada has truly described the reality of life. That is, we identify a goal, we identify the effort required to reach the goal, we make that effort, and we find we fail to reach the goal. But now the question is, why? Did we fail to reach the goal, as Prahlada says, purushartasya kutaha, says, what is the use of effort? Is that really the reason we failed to reach the goal? The reason we failed to reach the goal is there are so many other factors involved. By the way, if we were a little bit smarter, do you think we could reach our goal? Sure. In fact, if you were really smart, and you are, what you would do is you'd stick your foot in the water to see how the current was. You'd figure out the approximate speed of the current. And then remember from a, how long ago was it that you learned trigonometry? And you might think about going in this direction, swimming in this direction to compensate for the current. And if you did swim in such a way as to compensate for the current, you could arrive exactly at your goal. Look at Prahlada's conclusion. Purushartaha kutaha. Where is human effort? Where is free will? Is that a fair conclusion? We just disproved Prahlada. But there again, Prahlada has his own particular perspective. What we're looking at is free will in a bigger context. But what happens is somebody will pull a statement out of context. Look at this. Mahabharata says what? Purushartaha kutaha. What is the use of purushartha? And the person will then hold on to that statement and make it their personal truth, their motto in life. My motto is purushartaha kutaha. What is the use? So this is a person then who believes in the non-existence of free will. Is that knowledge of the non-existence of free will or belief in the non-existence? It's belief, right? In fact, it's a wrong belief. But that person with the wrong belief, they will see the goal, they'll jump in the water and start swimming towards to make the effort. But what will happen is, in the absence of free will, the person will find themselves not going in a direction they thought, but they'll be drifting down. And drifting down, then the person will remember his motto. What is the motto? Purushartaha kutaha. What is the use of trying, to put it in colloquial English? What is the use of trying? So what will this fellow do? Stop trying. And when he stops trying, where will he go? He'll go down. There are some waterfalls right here. Big rocks, rapids. The person will be destroyed when he hits the rocks. Purushartaha kutaha. What's the use of trying? Do you see how harmful that doctrine is? By the way, this is a fairly common misunderstanding, is it not? How many times have you heard someone say that, you know, that there's nothing in my hands? God, in colloquial Hindi, you hear it all the time. Kya karenge? What a harmful. You know, I can understand it in common speech. It's natural enough to say that. But it implies an underlying belief that there truly is nothing we can do. This is an extremely harmful position. It's an extremely harmful belief. Just to make very, very clear, there is no question from the standpoint of our experience that we're endowed with free will. We all experience ourselves as endowed with free will. From what we've just discussed, we can understand why we don't always get what we want and why we get what we don't want. And that happens because our free will is limited, and it also occurs because there are so many other factors out there affecting us. But when someone makes this misunderstanding and comes to the conclusion that it's not in my hands, you know, people will either some. There are a variety of cop-outs here. Cop-out is a nice American word for this. It describes where you give yourself permission to be irresponsible. That's what cop-out means, at least means to me. You give yourself permission to be irresponsible. For example, it's karma. It's my karma, mera karma, isahi hai. So you say, this is just the way my karma is, so what can I do? That is a cop-out. That's a failure to take responsibility. Or if you say, you know, this situation is too complicated, and it's too much for me to handle. There are situations which are intimidating and very severe. But when we conclude, therefore I am helpless, therefore I can do nothing, these are harmful conclusions. Harmful why? If you make no effort, the results are even worse. Prahlad is right. If you make an effort, you don't get what you want. I agree. If you make an effort, you don't get what you want. If you don't make an effort, it's even worse. Correct? Let's be very clear. If you make an effort, you don't get what you want. If you don't make an effort, the consequences are that much worse. So now we can understand what's going on a little bit better. This drawing I've made is typically used to describe the doctrine of karma, and where the flow of the water represents the flow of karma. And what's significant is it shows, regardless of the fact that there are factors affecting us, other people with free will, karma, whatever it is, there are so many factors, but it doesn't mean we're helpless. As we said, we could adjust and make it exactly to our goal. In fact, in this metaphor, if the current is fairly weak, you can swim upstream. Correct? If the current is fairly weak and you are a fairly strong swimmer, you can swim directly upstream. Where is helplessness? The only helplessness occurs when we conclude, kya karenge? That's harmful. When we conclude there's nothing that can be done, that's when we give ourselves permission to be irresponsible, and we lapse into a kind of helplessness, a kind of helplessness that we ourselves create. And then we suffer the consequences. Again, if you work hard, you don't get what you want. And if you do nothing, the consequences are so much worse. All right. In the next verse, he repeats the same thing from the other point of view.
Anishtasyabhinirvrittim. Anishtasyabhinirvrittim. Ishtasamvrittim evacha. Ishta samvrittameva aprayatnena pashyamaha aprayatnena pashy keshan chittat svabhavatah keshan chittat svabhavatah.
So previous verse said we can find situations where yatamananam, for those who strive, if even though they strive, you don't get what you want, you get what you don't want. Now, in this case, we were talking about the other fellows. Which fellows? Aprayatnena. Those who don't make any effort. So the previous verse was about the yatamanas, those who are making effort. This verse is about aprayatnas, those who make no effort. What about them? Pashyamaha, in the second line, we see, we observe that aprayatnena, without making any effort whatsoever, anishtasya abhinivrittim, and here it has to be nivritti and not nirvritti. We observe that aprayatnena, without making any effort at all, anishtasya abhinivritti, that what you don't want goes away. Aprayatnena, without making any effort, what you don't want goes away. Not only that, but ishta, what you want, samvrittim, is accomplished. What you don't want goes away. What you do want is accomplished aprayatnena, without any effort. Keshanchit, for some people. For some people this happens. Huh? It's true, right? Keshanchit, for some people, in some situations, without making any effort, you get what you want. It happens sometimes. So then we conclude, then what is the prior verse, purushartha kutaha? What is the point of purushartha? What is the purpose of effort? The prior verse says, you work hard, you still don't get what you want. This next verse says, if you do nothing, sometimes you get what you want. So he's building his argument. What is the point of purushartha? What is the point of free will if without any effort, some people get what they want and avoid what they don't want? Aprayatnena. How shall we understand it? Our drawing will help us. Suppose where you want to go is downstream. This is a metaphor. Suppose your goal is downstream. And you jump in the water, and this is your philosophy. I'll just won't do anything and see if I get what I want or not. So in that particular situation, notice even Prahlada says keshan chit, for some people. He didn't say for all people. He said for some people. So if your goal is to go downstream, suppose there's no waterfalls here, no rocks. If your goal is to go downstream, someone with that philosophy jumps in the water and they find that without swimming, without making any effort, they arrive at their destination. Wonderful. Does it always work that way? Notice this is a pretty unusual situation. That is that the current is going in exactly the direction you want. That represents that all the forces in nature and the free will of everyone around you, it's all going in the right direction. Therefore, you don't need to make any effort. I just thought of a silly metaphor. Suppose you're standing in line in queue in Tirupati for darshan. They have this long line, this long queue, and you're right outside the door waiting to come inside. If you haven't been there, there's always a long queue to go in for darshan, and also there's a fair amount of pushing because in order to get everyone through, you just get pushed along in the process. So you're waiting to get inside to look, and everyone behind you just pushes. So without any effort, you're pushed right in front of the deity and you get what you want. You get your darshan. How wonderful is that? Without making any effort, you're pushed right there. You don't even have to move your legs. They'll just push you along. But you know the other side of it, right? After you're there for about 15, 20 seconds... So pushing continues, and you're pushed out without moving your legs. Without making any effort, you're pushed in, and you get what you want. Without making any effort, you're pushed out, and you lose what you want. It cuts both ways. So if you make no effort occasionally, when the forces of the universe are going in the right direction, you get what you want. Tell me, how often does that happen? Where the forces of the universe conspire to make your dreams come true? Pretty rare. So for one who says, what is the use of free will? If I'm destined to get it, it will come. You've heard people talk like that. What is the use of free will? If I'm destined to get it, it'll come. If I'm not destined to get it, I'll not come. This is the philosophy of the fellow who jumps in the river and fails to make any effort at all to swim. It's a horrible mistake. Horrible because we fail. Bhagavan gave you free will. Before I said it, it's like a tool. For an enlightened person like Prahlada, the use of this tool is optional, clearly. Are you a Mahatma like Prahlada? Is your to-do list absolutely and permanently empty? If not, you should be grateful that Bhagavan gave you this tool called free will. But look at this. Bhagavan empowers us with free will, and then we decide, oh, yeah, but according to my philosophy, it's useless. What kind of philosophy is that? Bhagavan gave it to you. It's powerful. It's powerful when it's used properly. And we say, no, 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 that's not my philosophy. My philosophy is purushartha kutaha. What is the point of purushartha, of free will? These are misunderstandings. So Prahlada here concludes, keshanchit tat svabhavaha, svabhavataha. For some people in some situations, you get what you want, svabhavataha, according to nature. So if what you want is to go downstream, according to nature. Keshanchit, for some people in some situations. But you can see here that if we were to conclude that there is no such thing as free will, or there's no need to employ free will, these are both very serious misunderstandings. All right. And there's one more topic, which is found in the next three verses. The connection is what he said at the end here, svabhavataha. Definitely it's true that much in our lives is determined by nature. Much. Is everything in our lives determined by nature is something else. And that's what we're going to explore in the last section for today. The question is, how much of your life, your personality, your behavior, how much of it is determined by nature, by the gunas with which you're born, and how much of it is free will? How much of it is in your hands? Let's explore that. Yeah.
Pratirupadharakechata. Pratirupadharakechad drishyante buddhisattamah drishyante buddhisattam virupe bhyolpa buddhibhyo virupe bhyolpa buddhibhyo lipsamanadhanagamam lipsamanadhanagamam.
Prahlada makes this very peculiar observation. He says, drishyante, it is seen that there are kechit, there are some people who are buddhisattamaha, people who are blessed with tremendous intellects, blessed with intelligence, and they are also pratirupadharaha, they're also bearing pratirupa, good forms. These are the people who are, what do they say? The beautiful people, or is that expression? These are attractive people. These are people who are physically healthy. These are people who are physically attractive. These are people who have everything going for them. Not only do they have everything going for them physically, but they are also buddhisattva. They're also blessed with great intelligence. They're blessed with attractive, healthy bodies. They're blessed with great intelligence. Now, do these blessings imply that these people are somehow in a special category where everything is going to go their way? And this is what Prahlada observes. He says that even though you can find such people who are blessed with attractive, healthy bodies, who are blessed with powerful minds, but even then, lipsyamanaha, they go on begging dhanagamam for money. So you might be physically healthy and attractive, you might have a really brilliant mind, and you can be dirt poor for varieties of reasons. Intelligent people aren't always wealthy people. You say, well, if you're intelligent, you make good investments. Well, some of the most intelligent people we know lost their shirts in the economic downturn. So it's not merely a matter of intelligence. So here, Prahlada actually puts quite a bit of irony in his verse. He says, there are some people who are attractive and intelligent, but they still have to beg for money. From whom? They beg for money from whom? From the alpa buddhayaha, those who are not very intelligent, and those who are virupebhyaha, those who are unattractive, ugly people, so-called. So these attractive, intelligent people have no money. Who has the money? The less attractive, less intelligent people. It happens. There is no rule. Nature is such. We're beginning a brief discussion about gunas, about qualities. You may be blessed with certain qualities. You may not be blessed with other qualities. There's no rule. There's no prescriptive order. So here, just because you're blessed with an attractive body and an intelligent mind, it doesn't necessarily imply you should also be blessed with money. Contrarywise, for someone who is not physically attractive, someone who is not very smart, does it mean they shouldn't be blessed with money? There's no rule. Nature is such. And this is then unfolded in the next two verses.
Swabhava prerita sarve, swabhava prerita nivishante guna sada yada, vinishante guna yada, shubha shubhastada tatra, shubha shubhastada tasya kim mana karanam, tasya kim. Sarve gunaha nivishante. Sarve gunaha, all of the gunas, all of the qualities which nivishante, which have gone inside, which comprise your personality, which comprise your nature. All of these gunas are described in the second line as shubha and ashubha. There are good gunas and not so good gunas, good qualities and not so good qualities. Every one of our personalities have good traits and undesirable traits. In fact, the same trait can go both ways. Suppose you have tremendous dhriti, perseverance. Tremendous perseverance is a good quality, but at some point, tremendous perseverance becomes stubbornness. And stubbornness is an undesirable trait because it causes problems for ourselves and others. So even the same guna can both be shubha and ashubha. It can be desirable or undesirable depending on how it's manifest. And we all are combinations of factors. Each one of us are blessed with so many wonderful qualities, but each one of us also We each have our own individual lists of our own problems. Some people have a problem with anger, some people with pride, some people with one attachment, one thing or another. Our personality traits. So no, there's no person who has a perfectly good personality. There's no person who has the opposite personality that contains all negative ashubha gunas. Each one of us is a combination then of shubha and ashubha gunas, good qualities and undesirable qualities, all of us. And all of these qualities are svabhava prerita. They are all impelled, prerita. They're all impelled by svabhava. Here we come back to Prahlada's main thing. It's like a shruti. In Hindustani Carnatic music, shruti is that drone pitch. It's the one pitch that's always present there from the beginning of the piece to the end, in classical music, from the beginning of the piece to the end of the piece, that same shruti, that same note is droning on and on and on. Prahlada is also, pardon me for putting it in these terms, droning on and on and on about no free will. And he's looking for any opportunity he can to make the point. And here he makes a point that these gunas we have, good and bad, these we can say personality traits. These personality traits that we have, which are good, some are good and a few are bad, undesirable, all of these traits are svabhava prerita. All of these traits are prerita, impelled, brought up by svabhava nature. All of our traits, sarve, he says, all of these traits come according to nature. Let's examine that. All the way through, he's partially right. You know, he's made a lot of very profound observations. He said that even when you try, you don't get what you don't get what you want. Even when you try, you get what you don't want. That's a fact. By the way, can you put the word always in there? Does that work? Even though you try, you never get what you want. Even when you try, you always get what you don't want. You can't put in those words. It does happen that you try and you don't get what you want. It happens for the reasons we discussed moments ago. But when you take a principle and overextend it, in logic, this is a real common problem, overextending something. That's a mistake. And what's happened here is, once again, he's overextended something. He's saying that we're all blessed with qualities, some good and a few undesirable. And he says that these qualities are svabhava prerita, born of nature, determined by nature. He says, sarve, all of them, and that's the problem. Let's explore this. What does it mean to say that our qualities are born of nature? Think about, we discussed this briefly in the last class or the class before that, but we didn't get into it enough, so let's go into it a little bit more deeply. Consider your personality traits. If you're a patient person or an impatient person, if you're generous or not terribly generous, if you're warm and soft, or if you're kind of cold and distant, whatever the traits are, you know, we're all combinations of all of these traits. So just think for a moment on what a complex combination of personality traits each and every one of us are. And we each have really unique and distinct sets of personality traits. No two of us, none of us, are even similar when we look at all these traits carefully. Now, the question to you is, where did these personality traits come from? Personality traits is a little complex. We're talking about your personality. Let's not make it overly intellectual. Where did your personality come from? Let's dismiss some mistakes about it. Your personality came from Satchidananda Atma. How ridiculous is that? Satchidananda Atma has no personality. Shuddha Chaitanya, pure consciousness, the essence of who you are. Besides, personality traits reside in Satchidananda Atma, or do you think personality traits reside in your mind? Correct. So, how did they get there? How did your personality traits get in your mind? Did you put them there? It's complex. Did you put them there? Maybe. Chances are, however, that the majority of personality traits in your mind were put there by your parents and family members and other authority figures when you were young. Our personalities are formed, and I think there's plenty of modern psychology that discusses this. Our personalities are formed when we're quite young, like 5 years old, 4 years old, 3 years old. When you're 4 years old, you decide, I'm going to be a very patient and understanding person. Is that your decision when you're 4 years old? So if you happen to be a patient and understanding person, it's not because when you're 4 years old you decided you're going to be. It's because your parents or others inculcated these qualities in you. You were raised in an environment where certain personality traits were encouraged and others were discouraged. Think about your parents. They encouraged you for many things. I bet your parents discouraged you from several things, right? If you wanted to break windows, your parents would definitely discourage you. And that is, there are certain behaviors that parents would definitely discourage. Laziness, they would discourage. So, when we reflect on our personalities, the personality traits that abide in our mind, what Prahlada here calls gunas. So what he calls gunas are identical with what we call personality traits. The personality traits that you have, do they come from your parents or do they come from you? And this is a trick question. It's complicated. We can't say that our personalities are utterly not our own. We can't say that every bit of our personalities was determined by our parents. And we know that because in many ways you are similar to your parents. In a few ways you're very different. True, right? Many of your traits are in common with your parents, not surprisingly since you're raised by them, but there are probably several personality traits that you have which are radically different from your parents. Where did those come from? They didn't come from your parents. They came elsewhere. And perhaps they came intentionally because you said, that is a value I want to possess. And you yourself inculcated that particular trait or quality. So, now, the real question, well, let's just summarize this before we make the conclusion. Your personality traits are partially due to your parents, partially due to you. In my opinion, and this is just an opinion, I think for most of us, the vast majority of our traits are due to our parents. In my opinion, I think relatively few traits are chosen by us, but however you want to divide it up, the fact is that we are combinations of both. Now, the point of this, however, is that Prahlada wants to say, sarve gunaha swabhava prerita. He wants to say all qualities are due to nature. So to translate it into our present explanation, all of your personality traits are due to your parents, period. All. That's a danger. We could say many. We could even say most. We cannot say all. Why does he say all? Because he wants to deny free will. That's why. He's making a point. He wants to show that even your personality is not in your own hands. It's partially true, because in my observation, most of your personality traits are not in your hands. Most of your personality traits indeed are due to your parents and situations from youth, childhood. But not all. We do have free will, and at least in certain aspects of our lives, we use our free will to mold ourselves according to our own values, according to what we want to accomplish. So, but he says here then, he says all qualities are svabhava prerita. He overextends and says all qualities are due to nature. Tasya kim mana karanam. Very good observation. If all of your qualities are due to nature, tasya kim mana karanam, where is the scope for pride? How can you be proud? If you're a very kind and understanding and intelligent person, how can you be proud of it when you're not the author of it, when it comes from your parents? So here we admit that probably not all of our traits come from parents, but again, I think most of our qualities, most of what's good in us comes from our parents. So where's the scope for pride? Kim mana karanam. Okay, last verse. Svabhavadeva tat sarvam, svabhavadeva tat iti me nishchita matihi, iti me nishchita atma pratishtita prajna, atma pratishtita mama nasti tatonyata, mama. There's a really important point in this verse, which we won't have enough time to bring it out. So this next verse actually concludes one section, but it deserves more time to explain it fully. So we'll save it for the next time, and then we'll move on to the next section of our text. A couple of brief announcements before we conclude our class today. Should mention that a week from today, we're celebrating the new year.